Already, David Murata is here. He's the president of Murata Wealth Management, making his visit, actually his November visit, a little bit early this month. And it was interesting that he suggested that we get together today because the election is coming up, and the things that we're going to talk about today really are applicable to the election and people's voting considerations. So, David Murata, welcome back to The Shilling Show. Always good to have you here.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
All right, let's talk about Economics 101. I remember taking the class when I was in junior college, Economics 101. I still remember the teacher putting everything into the context of pizzas and beers. That was something that appealed to him, and everything was pizzas and beers. But he got the points across. And I guess I'd first like to establish if Economics 101 is fact or is it opinion? Because a lot of people seem divided on this issue, or at least unknowledgeable.
It was interesting. My daughter's second year now at UVA, and last year she took the first and second econ classes, and she knows kind of our political views and agrees with them mostly. And she said it's amazing the very first week they proved many of the points, not just by economics or opinion, but by mathematical fact. And she was impressed by the fact that the professor could go through the mathematics to show that this indeed was not opinion, it was straight fact. And econ is called the dismal science because very few people can connect the unintended consequences of an actions with their good intentions that they had to do it. And I think it's Hazlitt's book, Economics in One Lesson, that said that is the one lesson, is being able to see all of the unintended consequences and trying to maximize benefit not just for one individual, but for society as a whole. And a lot of things are counterintuitive. So I don't fault people for not understanding economics. I fault people for not trying to understand economics.
Well, that's the question. Why is it that we're so economically illiterate in the United States of America? You fault them for not trying, but are there other things we could do? Is it not focused on in the curriculum, or people just tuned out and don't care?
It's interesting. Yeah, studies show that econ classes increase economic awareness. It increases economic understanding. It makes people better citizens, better voters. We have all different kinds of requirements for university degrees around the country. I saw a survey of all of the different kinds of requirements that universities impose, and economics was the one requirement that absolutely no university surveyed required. So, for example, at the University of Virginia, UVA students have to take a non-Western perspective class. Mm-hmm. They have to take a writing requirement. They have to take a foreign language. There's all of these different requirements. Economics is the one thing I can guarantee that every single citizen in America needs to know, not just for their voting, but for their own financial well-being. And so an economics requirement would be a good requirement to have if you're going to have requirements.
When we talk about economics, there are several schools of economics, and Smith and Keynes and many others, Friedman and others who have talked about economics over the years. So can we look at them and say one school has been proven right and the other's been proven wrong? Are there elements of truth or actuality in each of these schools of economics? Can we talk about that?
Yeah, it's interesting. Keynesian economics has been soundly routed in most of the literature and defeated within intellectual thought. The studies just don't support it, and yet it's the basis of much of our decisions. In fact, probably most of our legislation is Keynesian in its thinking, and it just doesn't support it. Usually, whatever they've been able to sort of muster up in their defense, there's a different explanation for that explains it and correlates with the data much better. So Keynesian economics is difficult at best, and then when you try to implement it, you just find it doesn't have the same effect. It doesn't work, and it doesn't produce value for any country that tries to implement it.
All right. So who actually got it right? If we wanted to study economics from somebody who really understood it and had it correct, where should we turn?
I mean, Milton Friedman is clearly a leader. The supply side clearly has the data behind it. And that's the right way to look at it, I think.
Okay. 977-1070 is the phone number. David Murata is our guest. If you have a comment or a question, we'd love to hear from you. We have a line open for you at 977-1070. We're talking about economics and how it relates to the upcoming election. We're going to be getting into a survey in a few minutes, and maybe we'll ask you to take the survey along with us as we discuss it. But right now, let's go to Greg, who's on the line. And Greg, welcome to The Shilling Show. You're on with David Murata.
Hey, David. How are you? Hey, Rob.
Hey, Greg.
Doing good.
I have two quick questions. One is, if your daughter at UVA and UVA in general, are the economics professors over there pushing Mr. Keynes? Do any of them like Adam Smith or Mr. Friedman? And the second question is, in a free market world, when we're competing with other countries and producing widgets where the other countries are making 90 cents an hour and we're making union scale, how can we ever adjust that to where we can bring industry back to the United States? And I'm going to just sign off and see if you can help me with it.
Those are two great questions. So the first thing I'd like to say is I'm a big fan of the University of Virginia economics department. Ken Elzinga teaches the first class over there. He's the best econ instructor probably in the country at this point. His classes are dynamic. The students love his class so much that many of them sign up for economics because they love his instruction, not necessarily because they love economics.
Yeah.
And then future classes usually start to weed some of those out. But for any University of Virginia student listening, Ken Elzinga's class is the best class at UVA and by far the most interesting, and you'll love it. Another just sort of a side point is that the economics classes at UVA, I think, will make you a better voter. A friend of mine helped shuttle the University of Virginia College Republicans to the polls 2 years ago in the elections. And he came back from he said econ needs to be a requirement, because every single University of Virginia College Republican he shuttled over was majoring in economics.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought, you know, if we had more econ majors, we'd probably have more clear thinkers within the political polls. In regard to the second question, he's making a very much the right point. When the Berlin Wall fell, a billion people behind the communist wall suddenly emerged into the free market. And a billion people entering the free market and competing for wages is one of the reason why American wages have held relatively constant and not continued to increase. In many countries in Europe, the wage has actually decreased. And the reason it's decreased is because they don't have the same competitive that the United States does. So our competitiveness is what makes America great. Unions have hurt our competitiveness and made it much more difficult. At this point, the government's regulations and unions are hurting our manufacturing. Government regulation is now controlling a lot of healthcare, a lot of energy policy and energy companies. And now it's starting to influence a lot of the financials. What America is not regulating is technology and the technological innovation that we do. For example, Apple and the iPod is what we do best. But we have to send all the manufacturing overseas. So, for example, you know, Apple has to contract with, you know, Taiwan Semiconductors. And then the Apple iPod itself is actually put together by the largest company you've never heard of, Honghai,
uh-huh,
which is located in Taiwan. And so it's assembled there. And so Apple has to go overseas for its manufacturing, but because there's no regulation within technology, it can still compete on the world market. So it's difficult with the drag we have in the United States. The highest automated Ford assembly line is in rural Brazil, because the unions won't let that level of automation into this country because it would cost jobs. Instead, it costs the entire factory.
Yeah, that sounds like a wise decision, I say jokingly. All righty, Greg, thanks for the call. Leaves the line open at 977-1070 here on The Shilling Show, and Leon is standing by for you. So when we get back from the break, I think what I'd like to do, David, is I'd like to take this quiz, and I'm going to ask people to get, if you're in any place where you can get a pen or a pencil and a piece of paper out, we're going to do it right after the news. But we've got about a minute to set up what this survey is that we're going to be giving to people after the break. So go right ahead. Go ahead and tell us what the survey. This is a Zogby survey.
Yeah,
and about it.
This is a Zogby survey that that asked a number of questions, and it asks you to agree or disagree with each one. And then it also asked you political persuasions and a thousand other different questions. And then they tried to correlate what the correct answers were, mm-hmm, based upon Econ 101 with people's political persuasion or other facts about them. And what they found was that those who identified, who self-identified themselves as very liberal, progressive, liberal, or moderate, by and large got these factual questions wrong when they were asked as opinion questions. And I think that was the genius of it, is they asked you to agree, strongly disagree, or, you know, strongly agree, agree, strongly disagree, or don't know. If you answered every question don't know, you got 100% on the quiz. Because if you don't know, that's fine. But if you answered it wrong, and then you said I agree or I strongly agree when the correct answer was false, then they measured that poorly. And they found that progressives and liberals and moderates, by and large, got this wrong.
That is fascinating. When we get back, I want you to have a pen and pencil ready. It's just a very short quiz, only 8 questions. We'll do it true, false, or don't know. You'll have the option to answer that. And we'll see how you do when the Shilling Show returns. Also, give us a call, 977-1070. We want to hear from you. David Marotta is our guest, and we're talking about liberals getting basic economics wrong and considerations for voting next Tuesday. All right, Shilling Show back in a moment. And 977-1070 is the phone number. David Marotta is our guest. You can reach him online at emarotta.com. He's the president of Marotta Wealth Management. We're talking today, liberals get basic economics wrong, and we're going to give you the quiz right now. We want you to get out a pencil and a pen and a piece of paper and get ready to take this quiz and see how you do. It's only 8 questions. And David, I'm going to ask you, do you think we ought to just do true or false here, or how
yeah,
would you?
I think true or false, or agree or disagree, any way you want to do it. But okay. If you take it as a true or false question or quiz, I think it's a little bit easier because you'll stop trying to think about the way you wish the world was.
Yes.
And you'll start thinking about it the way it actually is. And
okay.
And that's helpful. And that's actually the genius of the quiz, is that they did not do that. They asked people their opinion rather than the way they thought the world was.
Okay. So let's go forward. If you have the questions in front of you, I'll let you go ahead and read them for
us. So number one, true or false, restrictions on housing development make housing less affordable.
Let's read each one twice.
So, number one, restrictions on housing development make housing less affordable.
True or false?
Then number two, do you want me to go through them all?
Yeah, let's go through all of them.
Okay. Number two, mandatory licensing of professional services increases the prices of those services. So again, mandatory licensing of professional services increases the prices of those services. And number three, overall, the standard of living is higher today than it was 30 years ago. So number three, overall, the standard of living is higher than it was 30 years ago. Number four, rent control leads to housing shortages. Rent control leads to housing shortages. Number five, a company with the largest market share is a monopoly. Number five, a company with the largest market share is a monopoly. Number six, third world workers working for American companies overseas are being exploited. Number six, third world workers working for American companies overseas are being exploited. Number seven, free trade leads to unemployment. Free trade leads to unemployment. And number eight, minimum wage laws raise unemployment. So again, number eight, last one, minimum wage laws raise unemployment.
All righty, so let's go through the list here and allow people to self-score. And let's go to the first one. Restrictions on housing development make housing less affordable. True or false?
Yeah, that's completely true. Anytime you put a restriction on anything, it makes it less affordable. And all the good efforts at restrictions on housing development make housing less affordable. It makes it more difficult.
It is funny to me, and we can look at this on a macro and a micro level, but just looking here in Charlottesville, Albemarle area, where they've put in all these zoning restrictions and all of these different things, hoops that you have to jump through in order to build a house, and limiting all these things. Basically, then on the other side, they're saying housing is unaffordable, so we have to tax people in order to start up an affordable housing fund. I mean, that's the sort of nonsense that goes on across the board in government, isn't it?
Yeah, and what I find most most interesting is people who can't afford a house in Albemarle County, so they live just on the edge outside of the county and then drive the entire length of the county on our roads, clogging up our traffic, just to come to work to do whatever it is that they work in town. So if the person who mows your lawn has to drive the entire length of the county to get to your lawn to mow it, it's just wrong. It's just bad on multiple levels.
And there's no reason for it. There's no logical reason for it to be happening. Alrighty, so number one is true. Number two, mandatory licensing of professional services increases the price of those services. Let's use an example. What are we talking about when we're talking about professional services?
In Los Angeles, you have to have a license to hang wallpaper. And as a result, the cost of hanging wallpaper in Los Angeles is much higher than it would be if anyone could hang wallpaper.
How ridiculous. But this is also, this would go for lawyers? Doctors,
it would go for lawyers,
for anybody who
doctors,
has a license,
financial professionals like myself. Any time there's hoops to go through, they call that a barrier to entry. And there's a barrier to entry for having a medallion to drive a taxi cab in New York. And as a consequence, taxi cabs in New York cost more than they would have otherwise.
All right. So number two is also true.
It's true.
All right. Number three.
Overall, the standard of living is higher today than it was 30 years ago. I don't know why 61% of progressives said false, but the correct answer is true. By any measure you want to measure it, the standard of living today is much, much higher than it was 30 years ago. Our poverty line today is about what middle class was 30 years ago. And so I don't know why progressives just want to think that everything is hateful and downplaying and none of this progress has made it into the poor. The poor are better off today than the middle class was 30, 40, 50 years ago. So that's another true.
I have to make a confession here. That's the only one of the bunch that I missed. And I think I'm probably a victim of the liberal media in hearing that the Americans, this is the first generation in which the American standard of living has actually decreased, and we will not be as prosperous as our parents were. Have you heard that before in the media?
Yes, I have. And there is some truth to the fact that every generation has been multiples better than the generation before it. In terms of financial wealth, the standard of living that we have, however, part of the problem is we are the consumer mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And 30 years ago, the average size of a house was much smaller, and no one had half of the conveniences that today we think we can't live without. So we're living higher. We may not have as much in our savings. The saving rate may have gone down, but then we have had a punitive savings policy among the government. So that contributes to it. But the standard of living is much higher. We're living in bigger houses. We're driving bigger cars. We have more cars. We have more televisions. We have a higher standard of living.
All righty. Let's go on to question four. This is an interesting one. Rent control leads to housing shortages. There are lots of liberals who think even rent control should be coming to Charlottesville.
Yep. And the most interesting story I heard is they used to have low-income housing in some slum, and they'd take a picture of the slum, and they'd be able to get the Capitol building in the background.
Yes.
And Congress, over more and more policies, made sure that they drove all of the low-income housing away from the view of the Capitol building.
So they couldn't get that in the picture?
So they couldn't get that photograph anymore. Rent control leads to housing shortages. There's no question about it. Anytime you hold down the price, and it just increases the demand beyond what the price is capable for. Imagine if you were trying to sell a dollar for 70 cents, you'd run out of dollars very quick.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way any kind of price control or rent control would work.
Yeah, it's a very good way to look at it, and I think it's a good example that people can understand. Rent control is not helpful. And the other thing is that, you know, basically having lived through rent control in Southern California, it wasn't in my city, but it was around us. You know, the landlords who own these buildings, they would never fix them. You know, they had no reason. In fact, sometimes they would just hold them vacant, you know, because they didn't want to get into spending all the money because it wasn't worth the rent that they were legally permitted to charge.
Yeah, that's exactly the kind of thing you find when you hold down prices.
All right, number five. Go right ahead.
By the way, number three reminds me, you know, in the 1970s, President Nixon put in price controls.
Yes.
And farmers they were drowning their chickens because if they fed them and raised them to adulthood, the feed that they were going to pay them was going to pay for the feed was going to cost more than they'd be able to get the chicken. So you know, President Nixon is often called a Republican. He was probably one of the worst in terms of his economic policies because he gave up on free market and instituted some very poor wage and price controls.
What about the times when they were dumping milk down the drains? Was that the same sort of issue?
That's exactly right. Anytime you have price controls, people won't even bother to make the commodity in the first place, and it leads to shortages.
All righty, let's go on to number five.
Number five, a company with the largest market share is a monopoly. Again, 31% of liberals said yes, true, and the correct answer is false. A company with the largest market share is not a monopoly. A monopoly is when you control the entire market. A company with the largest market share just has the largest market share, and usually it's because they're bringing it the best price and value possible, but they still have competition, and if you have competition, it's not a monopoly. And competition is good. It helps keep wages and prices in balance. I read a great story from Warren Buffett's mentor, and now I've lost his name. He's the richest man. You won't remember his name. And I was listening to him, and he was talking about working for a company, and they were trying to produce something that would print or fax from one of his companies, and the engineer said, "We just can't do it any better." And then he brought in a competitor that was better, faster, cheaper, and hands down above the board, selling more than their product. And the engineer said, "Okay, I guess we'll go back to the drawing boards. It can be done better." and it's that kind of competition that fuels things like the iPod. I mean, if you like your iPod, the iPod is a result of innovation and competition and companies trying to figure out how can I beat the Palm Pilot.
It is fantastic, and let's see, the amazing Leon Oliver just said Ben Graham. Is that the name you were looking for?
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Leon. We knew he was great. But if we could just divert for just about a minute, and then we're running late for the break. David, you talk about the competition and the products and so forth. If we could just look at Apple for a second and the Macintosh versus the PC, Apple very briefly tried to license the Macintosh hardware architecture and then kept it in-house and pulled it back and canceled all their licenses. And so they don't have competition in that way. They're the only one that manufactures Apple hardware for their computer operating system. And yet it is consistently seen to be as higher quality than PCs, which have farmed out all sorts of different companies to build a PC.
Yeah, it's interesting. My son is out in LA. He's doing film editing. Most of the film editing software runs on the Macintosh. And he reports that everyone universally, if they're doing high-end film editing, mm-hmm. buys a PC because it's cheaper, and there's a simple hack you can do in the Apple operating system to make it run on a PC.
Yes.
And you can get more CPU on the PC to run the Apple operating system. So it turns out there is a safety valve there, and while the Apple has a very clean design with multiple levels, I used to teach computer science. The structure of the architecture is very clean, but the IBM has always been better at getting more horsepower cheaper, mm-hmm. but it's just a very poor design because they integrate everything together and there's not clear layers between the operating systems. So it's actually more complex than just it's considered clean versus it's considered fast and best and cheap. There's actually a design component between those two, and I'm amazed at the number of people running the Apple operating system on IBM hardware because they can get a faster CPU for it.
They call it a Hackintosh.
Yes,
it's 12:47
right.
Here on The Shilling Show. We'll be back with David Morata and the final three questions when The Shilling Show returns. Alrighty, we're heading into the final segment of the program for this hour with David Morata. We're talking about liberals get basic economics wrong, and we're going through the test question by question, simply eight questions. And actually, David, you've got a link to this over on your website at emorata.com.
You can take a look at the original survey, and then you can take a look at the results from it as well.
Okay, so let's go on before we run out of time. We got about 4 minutes left, so let's go on to question number six where we left off.
Yeah, number six is the one that conservatives, very conservatives or libertarians get wrong the most, so this is a tough question. Third world workers working for American companies overseas are being exploited. And in truth, the implication of the question are being exploited simply by the fact that they're working for a lower wage than Americans are working. Mm-hmm. And then the correct answer is false. There may be someone somewhere in the third world who's being exploited by some you know, union union boss on the floor that's asking for favors in result to their employment. That's possible, but that happens everywhere. And the spirit of this question, at least, is that third world workers are being exploited by the mere fact that they're getting paid less. And our caller earlier was talking about, you know, being paid 90 cents an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Believe me, in India, if I get 90 cents an hour and I get to work indoors out of the elements and I actually get paid, 90 cents an hour is huge. And you can live like a king in India. So what overseas employment is doing is it's pulling people up out of poverty and giving them traction to actually build wealth management in their own lives.
And this is the same thing that happened in America with the factories. They weren't exploiting people. We might have even had this conversation last time you were here, is that people were moving up in the world and they wanted this work.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
All righty, let's go on to number seven. We're almost out of time.
Yeah, number seven, free trade leads to unemployment. And the correct answer is false. Free trade does not lead to unemployment. That's a more complex one. You have mm-hmm. to look at all the unintended consequences. Number eight, and this is the one that progressives, liberals, and moderates get wrong the most. Number eight is minimum wage laws raise unemployment. And the correct answer is true. Minimum wage laws do raise unemployment. And there's a sort of a complex view for that. If you set minimum wage for a nickel, it may not raise unemployment because there's very few people who are worth less than a nickel an hour.
Mm-hmm.
But if you set minimum wage laws at $100 an hour, you can see how very few of us would be employed, and it becomes more obvious. So the group that is hurt the most by minimum wage laws, it turns out, are minority teenagers. And the group that's helped the most is teenagers, middle-class teenagers in the suburbs. Because it removes all of their competition from the minorities and lower income who might be willing to work for a lower wage. And if I'm going to pay the higher wage, then I've got my pick of the cream of the crop among teenagers, and I'll take those that I find the most attractive. And so it hurts lower income teenagers, and it helps suburb teenagers.
I think what we could do to solve the problem is just raise the minimum wage to $100, and then we could all go on unemployment, and Congressman Perriello would extend it for another 99 weeks.
That would be great.
Wouldn't it?
And then we'd all be rich, because we'd all be making $100 an hour on unemployment.
You know, it is funny, though, and I'm hoping to have this conversation soon, because the UVA Living Wage Group has come forward again and making public statements. And, of course, they got the city of Charlottesville, Mayor Norris the Red, and the others to go along with a resolution saying, UVA, you should pay your people, I think it's $11.44 an hour. This is really a disaster in the making, isn't it?
It is. The increasing unemployment is probably one of the most discriminatory practices to minorities.
We're going to get into that on a future show, and I'm hoping that David Marotta can join us. In the meantime, David, thank you so much for being here today. I hope our listening audience got them right. Maybe you could send me an email or give us a call and let us know how you did on the quiz, how many out of eight you got correct. I did 7 out of 8, and David, how did you do? I'll bet you got them all right, didn't you?
I stumbled over the third word workers, and then yes. I read it again, and I got it right. So it was obvious to me what most of the correct answers were simply from economics. And that was the one where I had to say they're not asking if there's anyone anywhere in the world being exploited. They're asking if they're being exploited simply because of that.
Very quickly, the numbers, if you have them in front of you, we've got about 30 seconds left. How ultra-progressives versus ultra-liberals in getting it right?
Progressives get 34% right. They get an F on the test.
Uh-huh.
Liberals get 41% right, again, an F. Moderates get 54% right, again, an F. Conservatives get 78% right. I'll call that a C+. Very conservatives get 84% right, a solid B, and libertarians get 83% right, again, a solid B.
Now, I know you've been a professor in the past, and I'm going to have to chastise you for your grading scale, because that's not fair either. I think we need to grade this on the curve, and maybe some of those people with Fs could get Cs.
that might be okay. Although, remember, this is average groups. Some libertarians and some conservatives excel and get A+.
All righty. I'm sure they do. And it is very important information for people to understand. David Marotta, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.